Welcome to the Food Professor Podcast, presented by Cattle, Canada's Food Price Report Annual Edition. I'm Michael LeBlanc.
And I'm the Food Professor, Sylvain Charlebois.
On this episode, our special guest is Hugo Magnin, president, Group Mag Inc., founded in 1989 by Jacques Magnin. Group Mag is specialized in production and creation of mayonnaises, salad dressings, dips, spreads, and sauces based in La Belle Provence. Sylvain, I just may have found myself a new favorite mayonnaise.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Huh? It's really good. I mean, it's different. Hugo was kind enough to send me a sampler box, and I've used his classic mayo a couple of times, and I find it, you know, compared to, let's say, there's a Hellman's on one end, and then, of course, Duke's, which has got a twang to it. That is, I'm a big fan of Duke's from the South. It's a little saltier, a little more umami. I put it on a...
There's a lemony taste to it, too.
A little bit, yeah. I put it on. I used it in a couple of applications. I made, for example, not to, you know, I don't know if listeners care about this, but I made a homemade potato salad with it. And it's like a Texas potato salad. It's got kind of garlic pickles in it. And, you know, instead of kind of putting olive oil or canola oil in to make the base, I used his mayonnaise, and it turned out really super wonderful. I just cut back a little bit on the salt in the recipe because I found his had a little more salt, but you just balance those out. Anyway, fantastic story. It's a great product, and Hugo is very generous with his time and insight. So a great guest for us. And of course, we are going to talk about mostly, but not exclusively. We're going to delve into Canada's Food Price Report out today.
Yep, absolutely.
Including forecast for 2026.
Our 16th baby.
1/6 with about 150 authors as I go through it. So good for you for Corral and all that.
And many of them are active on media, so with media, which is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest, I enjoy media. It's just sure. You know, when you get 150 requests, you just can't handle them all. And I'm really pleased this year that we have great authors engaging with the media, starting with my good friend Evan Fraser out of the Inner Circle Guelph. Also, Sadaf Molehi, who's new to Guelph. She's really on this year. Stacey Taylor from our group in Halifax is also involved. Stuart Smith from the University of Saskatchewan, also conducting some interviews, engaging with media. Sure. As well. So lots and lots of people. And of course, Olivia Romanow, who is our writer this year, and she's out of Victoria, BC, and affiliated with our lab. And so they're all out there talking to media, which is great.
From sea to shining sea, you've got authors, specialists, academics. I mean, it's an opus of a report. I look forward to it every year. I get a copy of the report a couple of days in advance. So, I have a bit of a lead on it. I've had the chance to go through. I got a bunch of questions for you. And so we're also going to be talking about, by the way, checkout fail. So some research about what's happening in grocery with checkouts and the eye-watering cost of coffee, which is touched upon certainly in the report. But you kind of do it. Let's do a bit of a deeper dive on what's going on with coffee. Now, you and I were together in my living room. If you're on YouTube, yes. The whole interview is on is on YouTube, very popular already. But what were you doing? Well, I know what you were doing at my table. We were doing the podcast. And then you drove to London. How was London?
London was snowy, very windy as well. But it was great. I was actually meeting with agri-tailers, crop scientists, some farmers as well. They wanted to really get a better sense of what's happening in the world economy, what we're expecting in 2026. Of course, because there was no media and cameras and recordings, I kind of talked about Canada's food price report, what we're seeing for 2026. And it was funny because in the room, it was all of Eastern Canada. So Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic as well. And when you think about crops this year, Ontario did well, Quebec did okay, and in the Atlantic, it was terrible. And so,
because there wasn't, it was really dry, right?
Yeah. So when I was on stage, there were about 300 people in the room. I could tell who was from the Atlantic, who was from Quebec, and who was from Ontario. Ontario was all smiles. While in the Atlantic, they were pouting. It was not a good year for them. And so, yeah. And of course, we did talk about climate change and climate policy, carbon pricing, all the lovely stuff. That we've been talking about over the years, but generally speaking, I really enjoyed it. It's just the unfortunate thing is that I had to leave very early. I was there maybe for 18 hours, really. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of climate change and all that, Minister Guilbeault has resigned. Not that he had that portfolio in the Carney government. He's resigned from the cabinet.
I think he thought he did.
Well, yeah, I think he did it. Is one last taxpayer boondoggle to cop. I don't know what he was doing there, but he's still, I mean, he's an important Quebec lieutenant in the government. So he stayed on isn't resigned. He didn't cross the house. He's staying on, but he just decided based on his principles, which I don't always agree with, that it was time to step down from cabinet. Mm-hmm. You know, many would say good riddance. You know, you posted that, he had been quietly funding. Yeah, he had been quietly funding.
I respect independent his research. I mean, I respect his views and his advocacy. The problem that I have with former Minister Guilbeault is that he's never, made a clear change from being an activist to being a politician for all Canadians.
Yeah, Minister Greenpeace.
And when you look at his policy, I mean, it was. And he basically literally bought academia to support his narrative and policies through the Smart Prosperity Institute, the Canadian Climate Institute. Those were all funded by his department only to get academia to support some of his narrative. There was no debates. These institutes never looked at different angles to carbon pricing. And I just didn't respect that at all because it made academia look really bad. You remember the open letter with 400 economists? That was all him. That was all that money led to a lot of academics going out to defend the current policy. And I've always believed that, well, there were some flaws. It's not the carbon pricing policy was not perfect. Now, I think it was important to have this debate, but with him, there was no debate. And he basically did all the things he did unethically because he thought he had the right cause and science was on his side. And to me, that's a no-go. That's a no-go at all. That's all.
Well, out he goes. And what was he, culture minister? Some nonsense
he
like
was
that.
Culture. Yeah, Minister of Culture.
Minister of Culture. Not a political podcast, as many of our lovers and haters love us when we say that.
I think it's important to recognize that, it's important to talk about it, to continue to talk about it. And of course, we need to consider different solutions. And I've always believed for agri-food in particular, you need to incentivize the sector to adopt green technologies. But most importantly, taxing carbon, I don't think is the way to go, given the small margins. I've always believed that carbon capture is the way to go, even though the technology is not refined yet. There's still a long way to go. But I do think that carbon capture is probably the best way to get the agri-food sector to look at carbon pricing, generally speaking. And I can't speak on behalf of the other sectors. That's a different topic altogether. But when it comes to agri-food, you have to de-risk decarbonization.
Hmm. Well, let's change gears here. Let's get into the report. So as I said, here it is. I don't have a color printer, but there it is. A beautiful creative, by the way. It's very nice done and very well written. So congratulations.
It is the thickest report. So typically when I tell the group, we kind of limit the number of pages to about 22, 24. We have 32. Yep. We have a very vocal group of scholars involved, which is great. I mean, I love it. I mean, so Sylvain, could you put that in there? And everything was important. And they made some really good points. So I basically went along with it. And here we are.
Well, let's go through it. So let's hit the high notes. So the big, the line item, the one that makes the news most often is the projection for what will be the anticipated change in food next year, both at the macro level and at the family level. So take us through just first of all, those numbers.
Well, as you know, I mean, typically with AI, machine learning, those are the numbers we use as a conversation starter, and we let the model, we populate the model, and we get into a discussion based on what the model is telling us. And this year, I got to tell you, we went along with the model. We didn't really make many changes. I think for one or two categories, we make some changes based on some comments that were made within the team. But generally speaking, we just went along. And frankly, personally, I was hoping for lower numbers, because 4-6% is still quite a bit. And that's an extra $994 for a family of four for 2026. So it's a lot. And so that's one thing. Of course, what's driving the inflation rate will be meat again. We did say that a year ago. It did happen. And of course, the other categories, the one that we don't talk a whole lot about is other, which means center of the store, dry goods, pantry goods, coffee, tea, spices, sugar, dried pasta, sauce, all the things you find in the middle of the store. So we are expecting that section to increase in price because of the restructuring that we're about to see. I mean, we've talked about this on this show. A lot of manufacturers are restructuring, and they're probably going to be delisting a lot of stuff. And so there's going to be fewer choices, which could actually push prices higher. And we do expect the private labeling, white labeling effort to decelerate in 2026.
Decelerate, so less
decelerate. Yeah.
Now, where does that come from? Because I would think it's a natural reaction.
We have seen a lot of new products. Okay. It's just I think in 2026 there's going to be a bit of a pause. There's lots of brands that are they're going to try to fight for some shelf space there.
I see.
And so that's probably why we think that the center of the store will get more expensive. And the other sector that we don't really talk about a whole lot is our restaurants. Now, restaurants, so 4-6% for restaurants, it's an important feature to recognize, because with higher menu prices, it may actually keep people away, and they may actually consume retail a little bit more.
Yeah,
And this is, in our observation, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, is that, well, people are drinking less alcohol. You saw the LCBO results last week. It's sure. Across the board. Like everywhere in Canada, all commissions are reporting lower volume, more foot traffic, lower volume in sales. The SAQ is the same. The SLC in Nova Scotia is the same.
Yep.
And so as a restaurant operator, if you're selling less alcohol, you have to make money some other way. Mm-hmm. And so we are and because there's probably going to be some closures as well in the new year, less competition, we are expecting prices to jump a little bit in food service.
So I have kind of two, not competing thoughts, but complementary thoughts. I mean, on the one hand, less alcohol in restaurants means the bill is smaller. So, you know, perceptually, I'm paying less to go out to eat. You get the bill and it's, oh, yeah, geez, that's a lot less than getting a bottle of wine. So there's that encouragement. As you say, the industry makes a lot of money on wines and desserts and coffee, for that matter. You know, we see over and over again that there is tremendous research around loneliness, and, you know, bars and restaurants are a great place to go out. We've talked about it on this podcast.
And meet people.
Meet people, go out. Even if you're having dinner by yourself, a great restaurant will structure itself around solo dining. You had a whole narrative about that, and it's a way to get out. So I'm optimistic actually about restaurants. They do have to figure out if people are drinking less alcohol, where are they going to find the money to keep the doors open? But they're a creative lot. The other thing I wanted to say, I just wanted to call out some numbers. Now, you said that the increase would represent $984 increase from 2025 for the average family of four. It's interesting. I'll just call the number out. The estimate for how much people will spend on food next year, $17,571.79. I think you could have rounded up there, by the way, buddy. But anyway.
That's my team. I mean, we're scientists.
I think you could have rounded up there, but okay.
Actually, we only have two decimals, by the way.
Yeah. you probably argued for a month to get down to two decimal points. And I see that compared to the flow 5 years ago, So pre-COVID, I guess, right? It's 27% higher. So just to put some really interesting numbers, and now from a
frankly, with the forecasted increase, we're going to surpass 30% since COVID.
Right. So. Now let's talk about regionality. The regionality was interesting. I like your chart. You know, below average, above average. So 25 versus 26. Now I'll just pick out one province. Let's say. British Columbia was above average increase versus everyone else in 25, but you forecast it to be below average in 26. Talk about why that outcome, for example.
Yeah, no, well, basically with provinces, typically we look at cycles. When one province is actually below average one year, it'll be above average the following year or average. So that's typically how it works with provinces. Not always. We also look at the competitive landscape. I mean, for example, a few years ago, Manitoba saw like three new stores, like in Winnipeg, for example. And we know that Winnipeg, the data that comes out of Manitoba to support some of the reports published by Statistics Canada, well, it's skewed favorably by Winnipeg. And so we felt that perhaps there would be some effects there. So it really depends. And we tried to talk to everyone on the team and try to get a sense of what's happening. It's there's less science to the provincial forecast than the national forecast, and we actually do talk about that because in every research project there are always limitations, and frankly it boils down to data. There's not a whole lot of data, and so in Quebec, for example, it's one storyline that it's pretty easy to understand is that there's been an invasion of discount grocers in Quebec over the last 2 years. That will slow down in 2026, which could actually allow prices to increase again in the new year. I'm not saying there's going to be less competition. It's just, I mean, in the last 2-3 years, there's been several new discount grocers in Quebec, but we are expecting that to slow down quite a bit.
But let me follow that thread for a little bit. But it's not like then they're going to go away. So doesn't it mean that it's more of a permanent fixture? I mean, if you've got 100 new discount stores, you've got customer shopping discount, that won't change in 26. In other words, there'll still be 100 discount stores and people shopping it. So does that balance out? Is that a momentum thing?
You're the retail guy. I'm sure you'll appreciate that the opening of a discount grocer will have a huge impact on the market temporarily, because the competition will adjust. And so it's under threat. They call it, I mean, many years ago, if you remember, they call it the Walmart effect. Like,
If I was at Zellers, I remember the Walmart effect well.
Yeah. So obviously when an old Walmart opens up, there's deflation in that market for a while, but not forever.
Yeah,
not forever.
Yeah,
and the same happened. When IKEA opened up in Halifax a few years ago, the price for furniture went down in the Halifax area, but now they're up again.
Interesting. You know, there's a number of things that struck me as one. You talk about them in the report, and I guess I think of them as one time events that probably and won't directly repeat themselves in 26, for example, the tax freeze, the GST tax freeze, the holiday. Sorry, and also, you know, we put tariffs on U.S. goods that I don't think we're going to do again. So there's a few things that are not repeating that would seem to have, on the one hand, positive or negative, or is that just all a washout every year? There's something, you know, trade disputes. There's always going to be some one-time event that affects price up, down, or sideways each year.
I'd say, I mean, the GST holiday was not a good decision, to be honest, because it leaves a legacy. I mean, when you allow for opportunistic pricing to occur, that leaves a legacy. It pushes prices higher. Now, if you repeat that, it makes things even worse. We're not expecting that from the Carney government. I actually think that since he's been in power since April, the government is much more rational. And frankly, to be honest, since April, I haven't seen one decision negatively impacting food affordability in Canada so far from this government. In fact, if anything, I think he or the Liberal government, the new Liberal government, has actually made things better for Canadians. So at least there's that. So I honestly, the Trudeau years were terrible when it comes to foresight and understanding how some decisions would impact food affordability. But I do sense that this government understands, is sensitive to that issue.
Well, my take is that they look at everything. The Carney government looks at everything through an economic lens, whereas the Trudeau government was looking at everything through all kinds of other different lenses, and that would lead to different.
Yeah, all kinds. I would say that's an accurate.
That's charitable. That's charitable, by the way.
But yeah. So obviously, there are some wild cards, and the big wild card is the United States. So, however, our government deals with this unpredictable regime down south is likely going to impact policies here in Canada, but we're not shooting ourselves in the foot. And so if you stop doing these kinds of measures and provincially, we've seen some mistakes too. I mean, sending out checks to people just because you want to buy votes and you're showing that you're doing something is the worst thing you can do.
You call it a mistake. Premier Ford in Ontario would call it a third historic majority government. But by the way, we'll leave that aside.
I mean, I leave politics to politicians. I'm just talking about food economics, looking at the implications of some of the decisions that are made politically that really doesn't help, you know? Yeah. And so you have optics, political optics, and that's really Premier Ford's business. But I look at food affordability and, I mean, you send out checks of $600 to everyone in your province, chances are you're going to make food inflation a worse problem.
Echoing that, I want to talk about it next episode, but there's reports out that the food bank usage is even higher than it was last year. So that problem is not going away.
Oh, no. No,
in fact, getting worse, right? So clearly we didn't do anything. Nothing was done to address that.
Well, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, when you look at 2025, from an affordability perspective, I mean, you have to look at two things, two dimensions, prices, of course, and people's capacity to pay for food. And so you have to look at wages, debt, all that stuff. And people are spending more at the grocery store compared to last year. And so people have the capacity to spend more at the grocery store. Of course, with inflation, it's like a treadmill, right? You're just running on a spot a little bit. But people are spending more. And interest rates have dropped compared to last year. So if you have a mortgage on a variable rate, your payments
you're better
are
off.
Less. So that's the situation really change. But people are still going to food banks. So I don't know exactly what's going on there. I was expecting numbers to cap at some point, to reach a breaking point. But we're still dealing with a lot of people out there who are suffering.
Quick follow-up question on your center of the aisle point. It would seem, and I wonder how it factors into the report, maybe it doesn't, maybe it's unfactorable, but when I think of the center of the aisle as I walk down at the price is more shrinkflation impacted than it is price increase. You know, my bag of pasta is the same price, but it's less pasta. Does that factor in any way in the report in terms of people buying, you know, spending the same for less, particularly center of the aisle, I think of that, right?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we go with StatsCan's data for like when we report. So the 3.4% is from StatsCan, but does the 3.4% reflect the impact of shrinkflation? They say it does.
Okay.
But does it really?
Okay. Okay, I mean, Stats Canada would say it's factored into the model, so there could be something there.
We have a hard time seeing the evidence of that. But I mean, if they're saying it, they have a page and everything, and so it looks good. But honestly, I mean, shrinkflation is a complicated thing, and so in fact, actually, this afternoon I visited a great food manufacturer in Laval, Frankie's actually. They make a lot of organic snacks, a great company, an amazing company. In fact, probably I'll invite them to our podcast.
Great. But
I did ask the question after I visited the plant, the floor. Did you reduce quantities? Did you actually shrinkflate your products? I said no. Well, that's you should advertise that because everyone has done it.
Interesting.
We're shrinkflation free food manufacturer.
Hey, I want to wrap up this, and we'll put a link into the report into the show notes. But I want to wrap up on some positive influences for 2026 because there's several of them in the report. First of all, reduction of interprovincial barriers seems to be happening one way, shape, or another. We've got energy prices are pretty, are moderating. You point out that we were talking about it off mic. The code of conduct is coming into play next year. We're going to get Karen Proud back on the podcast next year, and you know, it officially kind of launches, and lots of people have officially signed up, so to speak. So there feels like there's negative influences, price pushing price up, but there's also some moderating influences that are helpful. So talk about those for the helpful things for a little bit.
Well, I mean, first of all, this is the one thing that I'm probably not going to talk about this week because of the report, because everyone's focused on the 6%. But I actually think that the marketplace is, or consumers is in a different place right now in 2026 versus 2022, 2023. We weren't ready in 2022, 2023. Inflation came violently into their lives at the grocery store. People weren't ready. They were still sticking to their shopping habits. We're not there anymore. I actually think that consumers are doing their homework. They're looking at prices, they leave their homes knowing how much they should be paying for certain products. They know that they have options when it comes to stores. They don't go to the same store anymore. And by the way, I mean, people are visiting grocery stores way more often now. Before COVID, it was 5.3 times a month. Now it's over 7. And the only reason is that because people are going to other places. That's all. And it's great because so the market intel you need to become a better shopper is absolutely there for people wanting to save money. And we've talked about the best before dates. We've talked about food rescuing apps. We've talked about loyalty programs. I mean, a lot of these things weren't used by shoppers. The price matching thing going on. I see myself a lot of consumers asking for price matches on site at the grocery store, and they know their rights about the accuracy code supported by RCC, the Retail Council of Canada. So, I mean, there's lots of positives that we don't talk about, but I do think that the 4-6% for 2026 won't be managed or cope with the same way as the 4-6% back in 2022, 2023.
That's a super interesting point, the qualitative difference, not the quantitative difference. That's a super point. I think we'll delve into that next season, not next season, but next year, next calendar year. With some interviews. So thanks for bringing that up. Now, I before we get to our interview with Hugo, I did want to talk about connected but different. I want to talk about coffee. You shared some numbers about the increase of coffee, and there's an article in the Globe and Mail talking about how restaurants actually are trying to deal with that. I mean, conveying the price. I was just, when you put it down in writing, it was just kind of shocking. I just had, you know, enjoying right now my espresso and my beautiful Yeti cup, keeping it warm. But talk about the numbers that you're seeing. Eye-watering increases, but we're not seeing those exactly on the shelf or at
It's funny because when I was in Brazil in June, things were up and up. If you look at the chart, prices were dropping, and so production was up. And of course, it's funny because when farmers make money, and all of a sudden they see yields go up, they see, oh, we got to produce. So the pressure's there. I saw mixed feelings out there. So farmers were happy because they were producing again and the weather was cooperating. But at the same time, prices were dropping. But now they're over $4 US a pound. And it's been steady for a while. So we're looking at a very expensive winter, which of course leads to us believing that the center of the store will likely remain quite expensive. So if you're a coffee lover out there, Right now it's too late. Prices have gone up already. And so, but I mean, at the same time, if you want to save, I don't see how coffee prices will drop anytime soon. So, so whatever price you set at the grocery store, that's the best you'll get probably for the next 6 months.
Ah, good advice. Good advice there. Stock up, pantry load. All right, let's take a break now. We'll come back. I want to talk about new research in self-checkout. But right now, let's get to our interview with Hugo from MAG. First of all, we're going to hear from our great sponsor, Cattle.
Cattle.
Need fast, reliable Canadian shopper insights? Meet Rapid Response, Cattle's most popular survey tool. In just 5 questions, you can reach any audience in Canada, French, English, or both, with results delivered in as little as 5 business days. Whether you've got a big retailer meeting coming up or need quick, credible data to guide decisions, Rapid Response gives you expert research and a powerful Excel-based dashboard, all for just $2,500, with subscription options that can save you even more. As a listener of the Food Professor podcast, your first Rapid Response is free. Just email at insights@cattle.ca and mention the Food Professor. That's insights@cattle.ca.
Well, on our show today, we actually welcome the CEO of Group MAG, based out of Quebec City or close to Quebec City. His name is Hugo Magnan, who I actually met at his Saint-Augustin-des-Morts plant a few weeks ago. Hugo, how are you?
Very good. Very good.
Well, welcome to our podcast. And I don't know if you do many podcasts? You're a celebrity now. You've been very successful with your mayonnaise the last year or so. So how are things going?
Things are going very incredible right now. Since a few months, it's just popping for us. The business is literally, I'd say, we have doubled our business for the last few months, so it's going very well.
It's incredible. The MAG mayonnaise, and for those wondering, MAG, it's MAG, MAG mayonnaise. It's a huge success story coming out of Quebec. So tell us, Hugo, tell us a little bit more about, you know, your background, yourself, and the company. I mean, the company is not new. It's a family business, but tell us about the history of the business.
It's a business that started in the 80s. My dad founded the company in 89. It all started with a small fish mousse business. Those mousse that are located in the retail in the fish department. We do smoked salmon mousse and shrimp and products like that. It's those products are still produced in our plan. And it all started with those product. And the base of the mousse is an emulsion. So back then we start doing emulsion and started making mayonnaise, and it became our signature.
Wow. And so how many products in total do you have now today?
Oh my God. We, I think we handle over 300 products.
Wow.
We do a lot of products for retail, and we do restaurant products as well. We do for our own brand, and also for private label and co-branding.
Mm. And you weren't always in retail, right? You were in service mostly, but you got into retail very recently.
Yeah, only in 2020, actually. When pandemic arrived, since we were doing mayonnaise in the restaurant business, we thought it could be a good timing to launch our mayonnaise in the retail. And we approach some of the majors, and that's where it all started.
And MAG stands for Magna, your family name, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, it's my last name, Magnan. So MAG. The funny story about it is my dad, back then when we started doing mayonnaise, we were wondering what name could we call this new brand, because the other brand for fish mousse, which is Malimousse, was not really well suited for a mayonnaise brand. So he, when he was signing checks or documents or stuff like that, he was signing MAG for their signature. So we thought it was a good idea to bring that for a brand. And that's where the MAG name came from.
You know, it's funny, when you were saying moose, I thought at first you were talking about that you were in the moose meat business or something connected to moose. I'm like, fish, moose? Wow, that's an interesting combination.
Well, Hugo, pardon Michael, he's easily confused with the French.
Yeah. That's right. I'm generally easily confused with anything, so that's the French or not.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a strange name, but we can call that dips and spreads.
Right. It's such an exciting story. I want to get back to this very interesting mix of business you have between restaurant, private label, and now retail. I want to come back to that. But for now, tell us a little bit about your philosophy today about how you develop products and how, you know, 300 products, that's a big line of products to maintain consistency and maintain the integrity of your brand. What's your guiding philosophy about, you know, continuing to make great products and thinking about new products?
Yeah, we have a name for that. We base our philosophy on soul food, food that's really comforting and made with care, because we focus on authenticity. And then on local ingredients when it's possible, and we base a lot on that. We have a R&D team that is always working on new products, but we put a lot of care on that soul food philosophy.
Right. And how many new products would you seek to develop in any given year? Do you guys have a goal for each year, or does inspiration speak, or do the customers speak? How do you approach that?
Yeah, it's more on the customers. We have a team that we are always looking for new stuff and new trend that come up from right now from TikTok and from Instagram. We have an eye on that for sure.
Yeah.
Cause there's a lot of thing going on over there. And, but we are also working on our trends. And, we developed 2 years ago, two flavors that won the Canadian new product. We had a truffle mayonnaise and a black garlic mayonnaise. So, we always are looking for
the truffle mayonnaise, which I've been enjoying. Is just amazing. It's an amazing product. So I'm not surprised that it won the Cane Grand Prix award.
You and I were talking off mic, and it's pretty obvious to anybody listening that you compete in a category dominated by some super big competitors. How does a Quebec-based brand like MAG compete with the global giants in the condiment aisle and I'm sure in food service as well?
Well, yeah, it is very, very hard. We can't outspend the giants, for sure, but we can outcreate them. Our agility, our creativity, and authenticity is our biggest strength, I'd say.
Interesting. It's super interesting. So you can move faster, move better, respond quicker. And that's a big, and you've got great ingredients, right? Quebec is such a wonderful source of fresh ingredients for you as well, I'm sure. Now, let's talk about balancing innovation and tradition, new products. Now, when I think, you and I, again, we're talking off mic, I was talking about a mayonnaise I liked. And lately I've been having my mayonnaise with avocado as an oil. I see all kinds of different things, but how do you balance innovation and tradition, you know, back to your philosophy when you're thinking about new flavors or products?
Yeah, yeah, well, it's a dance between new products and flavors that everyone loves, because we really want to bring products that and flavors that people love. That's one of the main thing that our team has to focus on when we're developing new products, because there's a lot of new trends and stuff like that, but it has to taste good, and that's something that we really, really, really want to focus on. So it's really hard, because sometimes you want to catch a trend, but it doesn't right. last forever. Right. So we really want to focus on those flavors that will please our customers.
And your price points are pretty attractive too, huh? Your products are very affordable.
Yeah, that's one thing. We want to bring products that are in the price point, that are similar to what exists, and as a reference on taste and as a reference on price, of course. Mm.
So you try to attract consumers that are sensitive to price, so they're not attracted to other competitive products, I guess. That you're very concerned about that.
Of course, yeah, because some of the more local company, they focus on maybe a higher end products, and that's not our thing. We really want to be big mainstream product.
You're looking for volume,
exactly,
as much as quality. Yeah. So could you tell us, before we go into your private labeling strategy, could you tell us where we can actually get your product right now? Like, where are you listed?
We're everywhere in the province of Quebec right now. So we are listed in Sobeys IGA, Loblaws. We have Maxi and Provigo here in Quebec. We're in Walmart, we're in Metro, Super C, and lately we launch products in Costco. Mm-hmm. So we are mainly everywhere in Quebec, but we are working something right now to launch our products in Ontario and the rest of Canada for sure.
Oh, really?
This year.
Okay. Because yeah. I'll be honest with you, I've actually been posting on social media some information about your company, and a lot of people have been asking, when can we buy this product? And because obviously all queries came from outside of Quebec, so that's good news for sure. Do you know approximately when your product will be available outside of Quebec?
Probably in January. Yeah.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Yeah, we have good news to bring in January.
That's great. So, breaking news out of the Food Professor podcast. There you go. So you're into the private labeling game. You're also branding your own products. How do you balance both?
It's complementary, because private label give us volume and stability, while mag it allows us to express our creativity and build on customers' taste. So yeah, in that world, we kind of balance both of them.
That's great. In terms of looking at ingredients, your procurement, I've toured your facilities. There's lots of ingredients for sure. Now, how do you manage your supply chain? Because I know both you and I, we've talked about, you know, fluctuating prices, quality. How do you shop around for the best ingredient overall?
Yeah, well, we give a lot of attention to our suppliers. We try to be more local as possible. We've been there for more than 35 years, and we built trust with our suppliers, and it's really important for us to build that trust. And we're just not like buying price, and we are focusing on be sure to be supply on the long term and build a very good relationship with our suppliers.
That's great. Now, before I pass the baton back to Michael to bring us home, let's get your thoughts on MAG, the company itself, and mayonnaise. And I mean, a lot of people out there are probably wondering, well, the condiment sector, I mean, the condiment market, can you really grow a business? Can you actually build a business? And there's lots of skeptics out there because the condiment sector is so competitive and you're up against major players. So what would you say to the people out there who are a little skeptical in terms of how to make a difference, how to make a dent like in that market?
Well, there is a place for us in that market. We kind of have proved it in the last 5 years. I think Canadians are looking for brands that they inspire them, and not brands that are coming from, even if it's they're made here in Canada, or they're not homegrown brands. And I think Canadian customers are looking for that. So there's room for us, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's fantastic. So let's change gears for the last couple of questions. Let's talk about sustainability, packaging, the number of products you're putting out, a lot of packaging. You're obviously a big factory and there's both technical requirements more and more on manufacturers for sustainability and recycling and packaging, and also just from the market. How do you think about those two things? There's compliance to what you need to do, and then there's B, how you think about it from the consumer's perspective.
Yeah, for sure. We are working on response right now for that demand for more recyclable packaging and new style of packaging. We are totally aware of all that, but since the price is really important for customer, we want to move slowly and be sure that we keep our products safe and our product similar every batch. So you want to make mm-hmm. sure mm-hmm. our move will be like that. But in this approach, we are always looking for that for new sourcing. But more than that, we put our supporting in our community. We want to be good for the planet, but for people as well, because our community starts from our employees. Right. So we want to give real good job with employees and be sure that it's kind of an issue right now with people that's struggling with the price of grocery. So we want to be there for supporting our community.
Hmm, fantastic. What a great approach. Now, it's a funny question because you've already told us a little bit about what's next for MAG. That's out of Quebec, outside Quebec distribution. By the way, I was the guy who kept asking and responding to Sylvain's post about MAG, saying, when can I get it? When can I get it? I love my mayonnaise.
By the way, Michael has his own barbecue show on YouTube called Last Request Barbecue. So obviously you may expect to see some MAG mayonnaise on his show.
Fantastic. On a side note, I love, there's a couple of recipes I make with mayonnaise, and I'd love to try yours with them. One is on turkey.
That'll be a pleasure. Yeah, on that'll turkey. Be a pleasure. We could send you some samples
for sure.
That'd be
fun. Anyway, what's next for you? So obviously expansion outside of the home province, which is wonderful news for everyone. And then new flavors. What else? What else is going on that you want to tell us about?
We have a lot of new things that are coming. We have new products that are coming soon. Sauces and dressing, because we didn't mention mm-hmm. we do sauces. We do like mm-hmm. uh, different flavored mayonnaise. And also we have a line of salad dressings. So we have new flavors that are coming this year. New lineup of new flavor mayonnaise as well. So a lot is coming this year. I think we
Mayonnaise, you have avocado oil mayonnaise. You have low sodium mayonnaise as well, correct?
We do. Yeah, we have a light version. We have an olive oil version. We have different sizes, squeeze bottles. Smaller bottles and bigger bottles. So, you know,
absolutely.
We do a lot.
Fantastic.
That's what's so impressive with your business is that you're playing the same game as the bigger players. I mean, you're offering so much variety out there. It's just impressive.
And this year we've been asking because we're getting more popular every week, I'd say, and are asking by our customers. Yeah, it's kind of crazy that some weeks are just a lot of customers are asking us for more condiment, and that is something we are working on right now. We believe that mag could be something else than mayonnaise. So yeah.
I'll let you
figure out.
All right. Well, one little question before I sign off, and that's with the expansion into Ontario and elsewhere, it might also spark some interest in shopping for you online. It's a good product to ship, I think. Online?
It's really store? Hard. It's really hard to ship. We've been there, and one of the major issue was winter because it freezes, and it's really hard to ship a package in winter that doesn't freeze. Sometimes it stays for a while on the porch. So
it's very hard.
And it's not a really, expensive product and it's an heavy one. So I think we have the worst, worst scenario, but
well, that's true.
We were shipping whole cases, of mayonnaise. Mm. Some customers were willing to buy, full cases. So yeah, that's something we can do.
All right. Well, I might work up to that because, I love my mayonnaise. But listen, Hugo, this has been wonderful to have you join us on the podcast. Thank you on behalf of myself and Sylvain for taking the time out of your no doubt super busy day to join us. And congratulations on all the success so far. And we wish you much continued success. And looking forward to keeping in touch and shopping you here in Toronto. And once again, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thanks.
Salut, Hugo.
All right, we are back. So I wanted to finish up on this interesting topic. I love talking about self-serve checkout because it's so multidimensional it's been around for a long, long time. I mean, the narrative or the criticism or critique has just been evolving over the years. At one point, it was,
But Michael, as a retail expert, with all of our discussions about AI and new technologies, wouldn't you expect better service,
better
more
technology.
Efficient self-checkout technologies?
Well,
seriously.
I'd answer that in two ways. One, I was in Montreal and saw at the Couche-Tard at the school
at
McGill
campus,
they had this AI machine vision where you could grab anything in the store and it would read what's there. That is a nice, elegant solution. You see some of that in the Amazon's pay-as-you-go or the Go technology where there is some of that. So the technology does exist. It doesn't exist in mass adoption throughout the industry. And, when it comes to things like RFID, and you make the point, you'd see an RFID a retailer, a mono-brand retailer like Decathlon, or Uniqlo would have RFID, which would be infinite, 100% correct. However, it's a mono brand, right? When you get to a grocery store or a department store, you got hundreds of vendors having to ensure hundreds of vendors put an RFID chip in. It's just not, the industry's just not there yet. So there's technology. I think that the great future, and there is some of this out there. The folks at NCR would tell me that there is machine vision happening, even at full serve, right? Because they take the same technology for self-serve and they implement it at the cache so that it speeds up. So the associate, you know, it serves up a suggestion of what they just put on there so they don't have to read it. So I think there is technology, but take us through, I don't know, the downside. I mean, there's some reports about what and how people use it. I've got a few comments on why it exists to begin with, but what did you observe?
Well, I mean, there's of course, there's this notion, there's some new research, academic research, looking at, I guess, theft intent, if you will. I mean, some people actually aren't going to the grocery store with the intent of stealing, but they do steal. Why? Because at the end, they pick the self-checkout lane, and then they go through this frustrating phase of code error and wait for an assist, getting the message, wait for an assistant and things like that. And it gets frustrating to a point where people are saying, you know what, I'm just going to pretend it's scanned and what, that's it. And, or I can't get the help I need to actually get the machine going. So I'm just going to move on and on and on. And that's it. So there's, there is an article that came out, I think last month, suggesting that 36% of theft at self-checkouts are done by people who just made a scanning error. They knew about it. They just didn't want to bother anyone, or they seeked help and couldn't get it.
Yeah.
So, so theft is a big problem for sure. I mean, I think everyone knows that, but I'm not sure the self-checkout strategy is working well for both the grocer and the consumer. I mean, when I think about, you know, fuel many years ago, I'm old enough and you're old enough to remember that when you went to get gas, there were people coming out of the garage to pump your gas, clean your windows, and you paid extra for that. And if you went to a place where they offer either service or self-serve, your self-serve price is actually lower. And I think people are failing to see what the benefits are for them if they actually do all the work. And I think that's probably fundamentally what the problem is right now.
That's an interesting point. I mean, really, the trade-off, I think, for consumers is convenience and speed rather than price, right? I don't want to stand in a line. And you know, listen, self-checkout.
Well, that's the incentive. And as soon as you start using these machines, all of a sudden you realize you have to talk to three people
that
to get
happen.
That machine going for you.
That can happen. I mean, I use self-checkout. I do a blend of both. I use full serve and self serve. Like when I've got more than 10 items, I'll just go through full serve because it's just easier and actually faster, even if there's a line. Yeah. And but at the same time, I went shopping at my local grocery store and I had 4 items. I beep beep beep, done, no problem. But you know, there are sometimes when.
I mean, when you think
errors.
Of the banking sector, they actually want to get rid of clerks. They didn't say it that way, but many years ago when they implemented ATMs, well, they wanted to automize the whole process of, you know, deposits and banking. And it kind of worked well. I mean,
yeah, there were some hookups
initially.
We're talking
about money
here.
You people gave money to a machine and trusted the freaking machine. We're talking about food here.
I kind of wrap up my thinking on this is that I thought we'd be much farther ahead than we are today.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And that's why I wrote this this piece today, because I thought, wow, I mean, shouldn't we make progress here when it comes to technologies to make this situation? If you really want us to use self-checkouts, well, make it pleasant.
Yeah. Now
here's a thought.
Now, yeah, I make it fun, make it pleasant, make it whatever.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I think the percentage of failure at self-checkout is actually relatively low.
But have you been to a Decathlon?
Yeah, with RFID.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's beautiful, but it's impossible. It's next impossible to grocery store because you've got to get a thousand, 10,000
like
vendors.
You saw what happened with Couche-Tard in Montreal. I mean, why can't we figure out a technology? You put some apples in there, you put pasta, spices, scan the whole thing, figure out the price, and you have the list in front of you, you double check. You can actually double check the within seconds.
Listen,
with AI and everything else. Why can't we do that?
It's all doable at one degree or another. The RFID is a very elegant solution. There's no question about RFID. It's foolproof. And Walmart actually announced that they'll be putting RFID on like 200 million pallets or some crazy number in the supply chain. That's a big first announcement. And actually, that's a big breakthrough, Sylvain, because that gets the price per unit of those chips, which, you know, I don't know, it's like a nickel or 4 cents per each of those chips. That adds up when you sell things in tonnage. But that, you know, once big retailers start adopting that in supply chain, it drives down that price and the infrastructure to support it. Not every grocery store can have, you know, downtown Toronto or Montreal, sure, but in the rural areas, you need a heavy infrastructure to support things like RFID, right? Just like machine vision.
But self-checkouts at the grocery store, they've been around for, I believe, almost two decades now.
I completely agree. I think I expected it to be much, much farther on than it is today.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, you and I have just been talking off mic about next year, calendar year, not next season, but we're taking a break over Christmas. And we've got a few interviews already done, actually, in the can. But it's a good topic to delve into.
But I think,
year.
I mean, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be nice to go back in time to 1917 and go to Piggy Wiggly's where you show up with your list and you have an attendant picking up all your stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't feel like a robber. You don't feel a thief.
I'll take you back to the LCBO and you hand them a list and they disappear and bring it out and see how much you like that too.
I mean, it would be great. And while you're waiting for your order, you actually can eat a donut or drink a beer. It's great.
You can go shopping.
On the house.
You can go shop at Consumers Distributors too, right? They call out your name.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, I remember those days. That's great.
I grew up in Ottawa, so when they'd call out your name, and whenever I would fill out the little pencil, you know, those stupid little pencils, I'd write my name as Pierre Trudeau. So then they'd always say on the announcement, "Pierre Trudeau, your order is ready." And of course, it's in Ottawa, and everybody would look anyway. It's a goofy thing. Kind of like
I wrote, "You're an idiot. You're an idiot. I'm an idiot."
look at you. Games we can play. Games
Orders
we can play.
Orders ready.
Yeah, you probably still do that at Starbucks too, don't you?
Of course.
Of course. All right.
Sylvain Charlebois. I'd rather actually be entertained and see someone look like a fool than seeing someone destroying my name.
Well, let's have none of that. This is a great episode. Congratulations, Sylvain, to you and the team for putting this report out. I know it's a bit of a beast, particularly
great
this year.
Great team, man. Thank you to the team. If you're listening, thank you so much for being part of this. It's great.
Fantastic. We'll be back next week. We still got a couple episodes left before we wrap the year. But for now, I'm Michael LeBlanc, media entrepreneur, and you are?
And I'm the food professor, Sylvain Charlebois.
Safe travels, everyone.
Take care.